Thank you very much, Gerard. Good morning, everyone. Jo Regeert, I hope I pronounced that correctly. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here today to at this jointly held conference between the European Commission and the Hungarian Innovation Office, and under the auspices of the Hungarian presidency. So we're here today on the beautiful shores of the Blue Danube, the Cake Duna, to talk about the Internet of Things, a phrase that I think you'll all agree is becoming about as ubiquitous as, well, the thing itself. I'm just checking the slides to see if they come up. Always good to have technical difficulties at an Internet of Things, future Internet conference. So what I hope to do this morning over the next 15 minutes or so is to set the stage for the discussions to follow, to really provide a bit of background, and if you like, to serve up some food for thought about the world of networked things that we are currently designing. So the IoT, as it's become known in acronym happy circles, is meant to refer to a vision of the Internet in which not only anyone can connect at any time, but so too can anything. And as Gerald mentioned, it was back in 2005 that I chose the Internet of Things as a topic for a publication at the ITU that looked at the future Internet, the ITU Internet Reports. And at that time, we identified four key technological enablers of the Internet of Things, of the vision of this Internet of Things. The first being the tagging of things through automatic ID technologies like RFID, the sensing of things through sensors and actuators, the shrinking of things through miniaturization and nanotechnology, and finally, things that think through increasingly embedded processing power. Now, as has been said, although the Internet of Things is seen as an innovative platform, it is based on some technologies that have been around for some time, just being used in different ways. After all, it's much to do with radio and radar, first used as an application in World War II to identify friend or foe aircraft. And we've always had sensors, haven't we, from thermometers to fire alarms. They're just getting smaller and more sophisticated. And for some time now, we've been at pains to make information processing more efficient and more embeddable. And of course, that big buzzword of all, convergence, has long been the name of the game. And perhaps the Internet of Things is the ultimate convergence, at least to the extent which we can imagine today. Add to this a number of complementary technologies that we're going to also hear about later in the conference that are happening right now, that are in the making. Embedded intelligence in smart cities and smart homes, in transport systems, real-time monitoring, assisted living, medical applications for the disabled and for the elderly. Augmented reality, such as memory enhancements, and the combination of a semantic web that some like to call Web 3.0 with a web of things. The overall vision, as I see it, is one of the interlinking of systems that have so far been isolated, of data sets that have seemed hitherto disparate, and of objects that to us thus far have seemed unconnected or even unconnectable, all as part of our effort to transform this endlessly growing expanse of bits and bytes into exploitable knowledge. And this, after all, is part of a greater human effort that goes way back, an age-old desire of humanity to control space and time. I mean, indeed, our Internet of Things will enable generations, present generations and coming generations, to add their own perspectives and their own notions of reality to objects and environments across not only geographies, but time as well, for the ultimate borderless sharing of global knowledge in real and virtual environments like that one. The promises of a global network of interconnected objects that will soon become as ubiquitous as the phrase and the World Wide Web of today. I mean, that's after all how the web began, with the creation of associations, of categorizations, of hierarchies of data, eventually searchable by you and by me. In an Internet of Things, things, as was said before, will be endowed with their own history, with their own identity, and with their own personality, in fact, leading to this reformulation of our relationship with our objects, past, present, and future. And this new network that's going to be before us is going to create not only predictable associations, but also random and serendipitous associations between things and between people and things. And this will stimulate whole new forms of interaction and new sets of possible queries. Objects will no longer be, in the words of Marshall McLuhan, neutral and passive, but active logos or utterances of the human mind or body that transform the user and their ground. I like to see it this way. Objects will be reborn, rewritten, again and again in our mind's eye and in the eye of the network. So this user-generated layer will be placed on self-aware objects that will be capable themselves of blogging, of self-organizing, and these will make them into fully participative and collaborative members of the network and perhaps even of society. So user-generated content, UGC, will merge with thing-generated content, creating this semantic world that's going to inform us of patterns in data. And those patterns are going to help us better leverage this increasingly vast data landscape. Because, ladies and gentlemen, no one can deny that over the last few decades, we've seen an explosion in the availability of data. The globe's natural systems, its human systems, and its physical objects have always generated an enormous amount of data, but we just haven't been able to capture it. The Internet of Things will allow us to do so, and to better connect, understand, and exploit it. If you like, it will help us better hear our planet. Like all the electronic media upon which it's founded, it'll not only serve to extend a single human sense, but all of our five senses simultaneously. Again, to quote McLuhan, the wheel is an extension of the foot, the book or print media, an extension of the eye, clothing, an extension of the skin, but electric circuitry is an extension of our central nervous system. As such, it is as though we are extroverting our human nervous system out into the world, creating a sort of new sensory planetary awareness and responsiveness. If you like, the body electric will now speak to the planet electric. Yes, this is certainly magic. It's like electricity, isn't it? But one must not forget that the Internet of Things, while bringing about all of these new opportunities and challenges, will also inherit the drawbacks of the current Internet, and on an infinitely larger scale, and a more invisible one as well. Privacy is, of course, one of the most important issues in this regard. I mean, generally speaking, even if privacy principles are sound in and of themselves, as might the legislation be, the rapid development and ubiquity of technology can make the application, but most importantly, the enforcement of rules, a harrowing process. And not surprisingly, this conference has dedicated an entire session on privacy and data protection right after this one. So I thought, since this is the case, I'd take this opportunity to bring forward some other issues which you will see are not wholly unrelated. Identity, efficiency, decisions, and disconnect. Identity. One of the most arresting challenges that we face today is the fragmentation of identity online. The same person, like yourself, might have a login on Skype, or is it MSN now? Flickr, Second Life, LinkedIn, Wikipedia, Facebook, and so on. Different identities for different contexts and services. Now, that's not a bad thing. It's a good thing to keep certain contexts separate. We need to do that. But it also creates difficulty for individual users. I can hardly remember my passwords. I don't know about you. And although the multiplicity of these different impressions and perceptions that we give on our identity can enhance, can augment, we use the word augment, who we are, they can also distract and they can also detract. The online fragmentation of identity is one of the biggest challenges that we face in this fully networked world and very much related to the issue of privacy. The addition of things, though, that will also themselves need to self-identify is only going to exacerbate that problem. The multiplicity of channels that we have at our disposal, they can enhance us, they can empower us, but they can also dilute and confuse us. Efficiency. Nowadays, we talk a lot about speed. Speed seems to be everything, right? Let's be more efficient in our processes. And yes, indeed, efficiency is a valid and an important goal today, particularly in the current economic climate. But we must remember that in our pursuit of this goal, we mustn't reduce individuals to mere numeric identifiers, to mere IP addresses, to such a point that the identifier itself begins to take precedence over the substantive elements of that person's identity. If you will, that the signifier is more important than the signified. Because soon there will be a large number of things, not only data, but data about things and things themselves associated with each person. And each person's identity will be affected by those things, the historicity of their identity, and most importantly, the interpretation of that identity by societal constructs. As was said by the previous speaker, the Internet of Things must primarily remain an internet for people, by people, and for people. Decisions. Now, we've been very busy lately adapting to all of these new technologies, right? Like our location services and our iPads and so on. And we're restructuring our lives around them. But we must take care, I think, not to delegate too much of our decision-making and our freedom of choice to machines. I mean, think of that driver obeying his GPS blindly, you know, like a puppet on strings in this narrow tunnel, listening to his GPS automated voice saying, "You have made the wrong turn. Please, you turn here." And of course, to the absolute dismay of all his fellow drivers in the tunnel, putting everyone in a dangerous predicament. But these are all digital helpers, and although helpful, they're shifting more and more control and also responsibility away from us and our internal thought processes. I mean, how many students go straight to Google to look the most insignificant thing up, or the most significant thing, without giving any time to any self-reflection or trying to remember something themselves? How many of us are guilty of the same thing? So I wonder, is it mostly mind over net, or net over mind? Or have the two become indistinguishably linked? Clearly, we've begun relying a lot on external information. And the problem is there's really no end to that amount of information. And add to that, the more information we download from things and devices and the network, the more cluttered our hard disks become. And so do our brain and our heart. In the words of this author and journalist I read last year, he wrote an article, James Gleick, he says, "Information infiltrates us. Infiltrates us. So do we cease to be its master?" Related to this, of course, is a problem that we've currently faced with today's internet, and that's the problem of information authenticity. How do we distinguish true information from false information? "All things are subject to information," said Nietzsche. "Whichever interpretation prevails at a given time is a function of power and not truth. And nowhere will this hold more true than in a pervasive and dynamic Internet of Things, editable by anyone and anything." And that brings me to the final point, perhaps most importantly, is that we are going to have to consciously strike a balance between the individual and the collective. Some people like to say that we need time away from the hive in order to ensure that our capacity for independent thinking, upon which all social and economic progress rests, is maintained. And to that point, since images do speak 1,000 words, I have a 2-minute clip here, very short one, which will hopefully have some sound. And it's pretty obvious, but I will translate if needed. And it's called Ciao Lara. That's a total coincidence. Ernesto Spinelli. It won the 2007 Best Short Film Award at the Archipelago Festival.
Ciao Lara, hai due video messaggi in segreteria. Premi on per ascoltarli.
Hi Lara, you have 2 new video messages. Press on to listen and watch.
Ciao Lara, il tuo programma preferito sta per cominciare. Premi on per registrarlo.
Hi Lara, your favorite program starts now. Press on to record.
Ciao Lara, mancano latte e uova nel frigo. Premi on per ordinarli.
Hi Lara, there are no milk or eggs in the fridge.
Ciao Lara,
press
mancano
on to
latte
order.
E uova nel frigo. Premi on per ordinarli.
Ciao Lara, there are no milk or eggs in the fridge. Press on, press on.
Ciao Lara, la cena è pronta. Premi on per servirla.
Hi Lara, your dinner is ready. Press on to serve.
Ciao Lara, hai 10 nuove email. Premi on per rispondere.
Ciao Lara.
Ciao Lara. Ciao Lara. Ciao Lara. Ciao Lara. Premi on. Ciao Lara. Premi on.
So, to conclude, ladies and gentlemen, although the landscape for the Internet of Things can be overwhelming and seem chaotic, as it does to Lara in the film, let us be inspired by the chaos. This is the Chinese symbol for chaos, which is the image of a new plant breaking ground. And the modern translation is that it's chaos. Chaos is the place where new dreams begin, where we can break new ground. So I say that it's a place where we can go right back to the future, right back to painting our future and all the wondrous things, as Picasso says, that we may think into it. Kosonom Sepen. Thank you very much.